This is Where Perth Talks at Night with Chris Ilsley on Perth Tonight.
An extremely interesting book is called Mission to China, How an Englishman Brought the West to the Orient. In fact, it's been described as a compelling history of Gold Coast writer John Holliday's great-great-grandfather, Walter Medhurst. He was a 19th-century missionary whose work in Asia and China in particular has left what's been described as a lasting impact that is still felt today. Well, I guess we'll talk to Walter Medhurst's great-great-grandson, John Holliday, right now. Hi, John.
Hello, Chris.
John, it's a pleasure to be talking to you. The thing I find most fascinating when you read stories about this, and we'll come to some of the detail in just a moment, is these days especially, it's very, very difficult to read annals of history where somebody hasn't tried to place a modern-day interpretation on a past event. And it's really putting square pegs into round holes.
Yes, I suppose that's true. There's a number of things about this story. First of all, it's a wonderful story of drama and love and tragedy, and his whole life story is a huge adventure. And he set out really to convert the Chinese, but in that, initially, he wasn't that successful. He was more successful at introducing a lot of other matters from the West, like in terms of education and healthcare, and it was the age of humanism, so people were concerned about banning slavery and having votes for everybody, well, all the men at that time. So tremendous changes, and he brought those in a way to China, and he also fed back a lot of information to England and America. He was constantly in the newspapers then, so there was a lot of information going both ways.
The most intriguing part of this book, though, is understanding that his work as a missionary almost came to take a back seat because he took up other humanitarian work effectively, didn't he?
He initially went out there as a printer. The London Missionary Society wanted to set up a mission station in Malacca, which is today Malaysia, and from there they would train missionaries to be able to go into China when China was ultimately open to foreigners. At that time, foreigners were completely banned from China under the orders of the emperor, and so they set up with the diaspora of the Chinese in Southeast Asia. And that's where Walter started, and as a printer, to set up a printing works to translate and print documents, Christian material, that they could circulate amongst the Chinese.
One would have to imagine he was surely taking a great risk, because I would imagine that, firstly, the emperor would not have been impressed with what he was doing. Conversely, I guess the people would have also been quite suspicious, because one thing that seems to have survived through the ages for the Chinese is superstition. So when you get people coming along talking about a religion which I would have imagined none of them have really heard of before, could only imagine there must have been a degree of suspicion even amongst the general Chinese population.
Well, actually, he expressed a number of viewpoints that he was always welcomed by the ordinary Chinese people, and it was only the Mandarins, like the government regulations, and he had discussions with quite senior Mandarins in different cities before people were really allowed to go there. He went on an exploratory trip. But he found them, even the Mandarins there, saying, well, we have to take this position because it's the rule of the empire, and therefore you're not allowed to be here and you must go. And yet they were quite friendly and wanted to sit and discuss with him. And the people themselves were just loving the idea of getting information from people that they'd never even seen before. They'd never seen a Westerner, so they didn't even know what they looked like. You know, these round eyes, these strange people coming ashore off a boat. So it was an amazing experience, almost like, human beings meeting aliens at that time. It's so unusual.
Yeah, the other funny thing is when they come along and they're preaching a certain message, how are they able to do that without getting people offside? Because once again, you have somebody, I suppose, that was essentially coming along and trying to impose what many might have interpreted as their will or their way of life upon another. And bearing in mind that people were totally unaware of any culture other than their own, how did they generally view that?
Well, I think it was the skill of Walter Medhurst, really. He went into their temples and he learned a lot about their religion. He admired a lot of Confucius beliefs, and he used those to argue back, well, Christianity is really agreeing with Confucius in this aspect, and he managed to keep himself out of trouble there with the ordinary people, that's for sure. Mind you, in his exploratory times, he ran some huge risks. He explored, when he was in Southeast Asia before he could go to China, he explored all throughout Malaysia, Thailand, Borneo, Bali, which was a wild place at that time. It wasn't part of the Dutch East Indies at that time. And he was chased by pirate ships. He escaped headhunting dyaks in the Borneo, in the jungle in Borneo. So, I mean, we know about the missionaries who went to Africa and their adventures, etc. But by God, this man did just as much in the wilds of Southeast Asia as they were then.
When we look at these missionaries, was their mission, sorry to have the obvious pun there, purely and simply to spread the word of Christianity, or was there a greater and perhaps not well understood meaning behind what they were doing?
Well, I think it varied from one person to another, and one religion to another. It was basically a congregationist. They had very little hierarchy in their church, and he was always open to discuss with any Christian faith, mostly Protestants, but it was not like there was a rigid stricture being laid down, such as the Pope did with the Catholic Church. So he was very open in that regard,
Actually, I think that kind of thing, Catholicism of those times, may well have not been acceptable to people.
Well, actually, they were introduced long before Walter in the earlier times. The ban that we speak about from the Empire is the Qing Dynasty. But in earlier times, the Portuguese had been in there, and so there was quite a bit of awareness about Christianity, but of Catholicism from the Portuguese.
What was there, and how did they interpret Catholicism? Because it tends to be a bit more legalistic, which is something that kind of makes me wonder how it would have been received by people who'd never heard of it before and were basically being given this as an instruction or almost a law.
Like I say, it depended upon the person and the religion. Now, in the case of Walter Medhurst, I think he was motivated as much by other factors, secular factors, about improved education, improved healthcare, and those sorts of things. Because when he eventually got to Shanghai, he set up a clinic there for the mission, and that's now the Renji Hospital, which is the largest hospital in Shanghai. And everywhere he went, he set up schools. And it's interesting, when he went out there, he left England in 1816, and it took him 5 months to get out to Madras, where he had to wait another 3 months for a ship to take him on to Malacca. While he was there, he met, fell in love with, and married a young Anglo-Indian widow, and she became a really important part of his mission services. She was fluent in three languages, English, Tamil, and Telugu, and I don't know, but as soon as they got to Malacca, I think probably one of her languages was somewhat similar to Malay, because she immediately applied herself to learning Malay, and she ran the first schools they set up for the Malay children. You know, there were a lot of other things motivating this man other than to spread the word of Christianity.
The thing that always intrigues me about people like this, we go back to times when most would have been unaware of the world in which they lived. Even the neighbouring countries, they could have been unaware of those. Yet here were these people who decided they wanted to go to far-flung lands, something we have trouble relating to these days, lands about which they would have known extraordinarily little, and for some reason they felt the need to bestow some sort of humanitarian help. The thing I'm most interested in is how they knew that these, or felt that these countries needed help, and what was it that motivated them to go there?
Well, there were quite a few influences. He was brought up in London, which was then the centre of trade worldwide. Down the street from his school was the East India Company, and that was just one of the largest companies in the world, and they were trading in India and out to other parts of Asia. There was also the Hudson's Bay Company trading into North America. So there were the traders, and once they'd set up, and in fact the East India Company set up in India long before Walter was involved, and a lot of people would have gone out as tradespeople, but also it required then some military force, and they set up their own army. And that was, the lady he married was the daughter of an officer from the Madras Infantry. So that's another story. It's another part of the book about her upbringing and his adventures as an officer in the East Indian Army, two British officers commanding 1,000 Indian soldiers. Some fascinating stuff. And this is what I've loved about writing this book, is I've had to dig into what was going on, where they were at any particular time, and there's been some fascinating stories come out of it. It's wonderful. It's a way to learn history without going through dusty old reference books. This is a story, and it tells what was happening at that time.
What you're really saying is that this is a way of learning history that's fun and not the boring way that it was often taught in school.
Exactly.
By the way, John Holliday is the, and I've got to get this right, the great-great-grandson of Walter Methurst, about whom this book is written. The book, by the way, is called Mission to China, How an Englishman Brought the West to the Orient. Thanks very much for having a chat to us. By the way, the book's out now through in both printed and electronic forms. Been a pleasure, John.
All right. Well, thank you for having me, Chris.